Good morning, Your Honors, Mr. Nelson. My name is Richard Steck, and I represent Aretta Colburn, the appellant. I will confine my argument today to the issue that I think is the one that brought her us here, although there are other issues involved in this case that have been raised in the appellee's brief. The issue I want to address is whether the courts must simply take the word of a defendant that it is not acting for a non-discriminatory reason when it terminates an employee, or whether that can be tested as to its veracity and credibility. Particularly, I think, is credibility in this case. And I think that the court should note that there is some tension between the McDonnell-Douglas way of analyzing employment discrimination cases and the summary judgment procedure. The summary judgment procedure, of course, will provide that the facts are to be taken in the light most favorable to the plaintiff. It doesn't really say anything about credibility. The case law would say that credibility is a question for the jury automatically. I think that's what we have here. There were essentially three reasons given for Loyola, which they say were the non-discriminatory reasons for the termination of Dr. Colburn. They were downsizing, reorganization, and qualification. They have articulated those reasons. There is absolutely nothing in this record that will support that any of those were valid. With respect to downsizing, there is nothing in the record that shows the Department of Pathology, where Dr. Colburn worked, at any time shrunk. If by downsizing they mean that they terminated employees, that's certainly the case. But I don't think that's what downsizing means when we're talking about a non-discriminatory reason. Facts of this case are that the department actually grew from some 35 faculty members to some 57 faculty members. That's the only evidence in this record that has anything to do with downsizing. And the fact that Loyola repeats it and repeats it and repeats it doesn't make it any more credible. The same is true of their argument that there was a reorganization. There is nothing in this record other than Dr. Colburn's affidavit, which describes what little reorganization there was, that would indicate that any reorganization of any kind took place.
She had a year-to-year contract of employment, didn't she?
Yes, she did.
And didn't they allege, too, that she had some errors or mistakes in her work?
Those would go to the qualification issues, and I'm certainly going to address those. Although these so-called mistakes occurred after the decision to terminate her was made. It was also an afterthought, and there is absolutely no documentation about any of them. What I mean by that is this. If you look at the documents that are available in this record that deal with qualification, you will find that there are, as to her qualification, only her own CV, the evaluations that were done by Loyola's chairman or acting chairman of the Department of Pathology from time to time, and a letter from Dr. Leishner to Dr. McClatchy that was written when Dr. McClatchy had still not assumed the duties of the chairmanship of the department. It was some 4 or 5 months before then. He was a consultant at that time, in which Dr. Leishner says that she was in the top 25% of the faculty, that she was a tireless worker, that she was an excellent teacher, that she was known for her abilities in doing research, what he terms as an investigator, and that if she had a flaw, it was that, if anything, she was too intense at times, that kind of put people off. But there was no criticism of her work whatsoever, quite the contrary. The evaluations that were given, including the evaluation by Dr. McClatchy just before he terminated her, make no suggestion whatsoever that there was ever anything wrong with her day-to-day functioning in the department, or that she had made mistakes, or that anything occurred that could be considered to be disparaging upon her abilities. In fact, fact, the only thing he said that was at all questionable, this is McClatchy himself, virtually at the time that he fired her, was that he didn't think her research was so great. The incidents, which are alleged by Loyola as an afterthought, are totally undocumented. They appear only in the deposition for the first time of McClatchy, or in some of the documents that were submitted as position statements at EEOC. There is no evidence that any of these so-called allegations were ever investigated by Loyola. There is no evidence of any kind that Dr. McClatchy ever conducted his own investigation. There is no statements taken from anyone or anything of the kind. It's very comparable to Dr. McClatchy's allegation that she didn't get along with people in the lab, except in that case we took the depositions of Krempel and of Blakemore, and neither of them knew what he was talking about. So far as they knew, she conducted herself professionally in the lab at all times, and they had never received any complaint about her conduct from anyone. In fact, the entire issue of qualification, I think, is something that should be viewed as affecting the credibility of these other reasons, the initial reasons given for terminating this physician who was board certified in three separate specialties and had been at Loyola for 10 years. When, and I think the case law will support it, a defendant in one of these cases starts giving multiple reasons which themselves are questionable, it affects the credibility of the initial reasons given. That fact, I think, the fact that this is such a shallow argument and so unsupported, affects the other reasons that they have given. Those reasons are also affected by the timeline, which I think is an important aspect of the way this occurred. McClatchy had been the head of the department for approximately 3 months when he reorganized my client by taking away her laboratory privileges and appointing two younger males, neither of whom were board certified, to virtually run the laboratory to her exclusion. That occurred in December of 1996. She complained about it. She had her lawyer write a letter to the president of the university, and that was delivered to McClatchy and to other officials who McClatchy reported to. And the same day that they received the letter, Dr. McClatchy recommended that she be terminated. I think that goes to the credibility of the reasons for that termination, not downsizing, not some mythical reorganization.
Didn't they release a lot of other doctors, male and female?
They released several doctors, and they rehired at least one of them, and then they hired some additional doctors.
Male and female.
Male and female. I think the case law supports the proposition that those facts are not facts which are to be considered.
And she had a year-to-year contract.
She did have a year-to-year contract. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Nevertheless, these contracts were routinely renewed, unless there was some other reason for discharging an employee. In this case, we believe sex and age discrimination was the reason. Loyola gives the reasons of downsizing, which didn't exist, reorganization, which is entirely undocumented in this record, except by my client.
Do you have any problem of a misdiagnosis on any of the tests that she made?
She says not. And there is nothing in
what
this record.
What did the university say?
Dr. McClatchy said that Dr. Tsai had come to him with a misdiagnosis, but it was never brought to Dr. Palvern's attention, according to her testimony, and it was never documented in any way, shape, or form by either Dr. Tsai or by Dr. McClatchy at the time. You would think in a university department of this reputation and size that if there was some serious misdiagnosis, you might have those things. It affects the credibility. And it is the credibility of those reasons that it is at issue in this case. Judge Manning said that the reorganization and downsizing was supported by memorandums, letters, and individual faculty terminations. determinations say nothing about downsizing.
Loyola was having financial problems, weren't they?
Well, they said they were having financial problems.
But they closed their dental school, didn't they?
I don't know. That's possible. The fact is the Department of Pathology, whether they were having financial problems or not, grew from 35 faculty members to 57.
Right. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Richard Nelson. I represent Loyola University Medical Center, Loyola University of Chicago, Loyola University Physician Foundation, and Dr. Kenneth D. McClatchy, the appellees in this case. Your Honor, addressing the ultimate issue of discrimination in the first instance, Dr. Cole Vern's position on appeal that no reorganization of the pathology department ever took place contradicts not only the allegations of her own complaint, but also the her sworn deposition testimony.
Can I ask you just one thing that troubles me about this case? We've had a whole bunch of cases that talk about suspicious timing when an adverse employment action takes place close in time to a complaint. I've never seen a case where it happened at the same time. Here you've got an attorney letter complaining about discrimination and the adverse employment action is taken the same day. That seems to be a lot more than suspicious timing. It's just,
Your Honor, as far as the timeline,
very bothersome.
Dr. McClatchy was in fact brought in for the sole purpose of reorganizing the pathology department. Dr. Barbato, who is the senior academic officer for Loyola University of Chicago Stritch School of Medicine, received complaints from various department chairpersons, surgical departments that the pathology department serviced. He, in turn, hired Dr. McClatchy first as a consultant. His consultant was to come in and look at the pathology department and to overhaul it. There were problems with the budget, expenses, deficiencies in operation, consolidate clinical areas. The decision to reorganize the department had already been made. At the time the recommendations were made to Dean Winship, the fact that Dr. Cole Vern was notified in advance by Dr. McClatchy that he was going to recommend the non-renewal of her faculty appointment prompted the letter to the university president. So I don't think there's anything suspicious about the timing in how the events unfolded, other than once Dr. Colvern became aware that the department chairman was going to recommend the non-renewal of her annual faculty appointment, as well as seven other members of the pathology department. That prompted the whole letter of complaint, the filing of the charges with the EEOC.
So the record suggests that she knew this was a done deal and she was going to lose her job before the attorney sent the letter.
That's my understanding.
Sending a letter like that shouldn't immunize you from being discharged if the decision has already been made.
I do believe that's correct, Your Honor. That
I don't know what
she's alleged in
the horse here.
She's alleged in Dr. Colvern is alleged in her EEOC charge that Dr. McClatchy notified her during January 15 of 1997, I believe it was, that her annual faculty appointment would not be renewed. 96, her annual faculty appointment would not be renewed for the following year as part of the reorganization. But with regard to the allegations of her complaint and the reorganization, she's alleged in her complaint that during the summer of 1996, Dr. McClatchy proposed the reorganization of the pathology department and requested comments and suggestions from the staff. Dr. Colvern also admits in her deposition that in 1996, the pathology department was in fact undergoing a reorganization. She even submitted her own plan to Dr. McClatchy for the reorganization of the pathology department, in which she proposed that she be made the head of the hematopathology section of the department. So I think all that those admissions support that there was in fact a reorganization. And in addition, in opposition to the summary judgment motion, Dr. Colvern submitted an affidavit attempting to contradict the prior deposition testimony that a reorganization of the pathology department took place, and submit that the district court properly rejected that because she cannot, under this court's precedence, contradict the admissions and prior sworn deposition testimony in an attempt to defeat summary judgment. But moreover, the defendants came forward with affirmative evidence that included the pathology department suffered from productivity problems, organizational problems, the other non-renewals of the faculty members were presented to Dr. Barbato and submitted in favor and in support of the summary judgment motion. As to Dr. Colvern's age discrimination claim, there's no direct evidence of any age discrimination. She's adduced no evidence that any age-related statements were made. She expressly disclaimed any age discriminatory animus by Dr. Barbato, who was in fact the ultimate decision maker in the non-renewal of her faculty appointment, as well as the other members of the pathology department. When she was first hired, she was over 40. Her annual faculty appointment was renewed by Dr. Barbato from year to year at a time when she was in fact over 40. She had earlier requested a change in her faculty appointment from the pediatrics department to the pathology department, which Dr. Barbato granted to her, also at a time when she was over 40. With regard to Dr. Colvern's sex discrimination claim, the majority of the pathology department was female before the reorganization. It remained female after the non-renewal of the annual faculty appointments. The faculty members retained in the pathology department of at least 13 sections of the pathology department, the directors of those sections are all female. The Committee on Faculty Appointments that was responsible for reviewing the recommendations for the non-renewal of the faculty appointments and making the further recommendations to Dr. Barbato was over one half female and was chaired by a female. So I would submit that Dr. Colvern has submitted no evidence to support that the reasons for the non-renewal of the faculty appointment was pretext for sex or age discrimination or retaliation. In regard to a retaliation claim, again, Dr. Colvern did not file her EEOC charge until after Dr. McClatchy had notified her that he would be recommending the non-renewal of her annual faculty appointment. Since the charge was filed after she had notice of the impending adverse employment action, assuming it was approved by the committee and Dr. Barbato, that she has not established any causal connection between the protected participation conduct under Title VII and the non-renewal of her faculty appointment, so her claim fails at that stage at the prima facie case. Regarding her Title IX claim, I would submit that Dr. Colvern has waived that claim. Review a summary judgment on that claim since she has not attacked it on appeal or addressed it in her appeal brief, and that summary judgment should be summarily affirmed on her Title IX claim. Regardless, summary judgment was properly entered by the district court on her Title IX claim because she failed to establish that she was denied any participation in federal grants. She cannot sue Dr. McClatchy in his individual or supervisory capacity as a matter of law because he's not considered a grant recipient under Title IX, and that Dr. Colvern's exclusive remedy for sex discrimination in employment is pursuant to Title VII, and as the district court found, she therefore could not bring a private cause of action under Title IX. Dr. Colvern has also alleged what she characterized as retaliation through dissemination of adverse references. like her Title IX claim, she has not attacked this on appeal or in her appeal brief, so I would respectfully submit that summary judgment on that claim should also be summarily affirmed. If not, the district court properly entered summary judgment on that claim because Dr. Colburn failed to establish by any evidence that any act by any defendant caused her to not be considered for employment or denied employment by any prospective employer. It also, thank you, Your Honor, my time's up.
All right, counsel, thank you. How much time is he at, please? Your time is up. Go ahead, sure. Go ahead.
I just wanted to point out that the letter from Dr. Colburn's attorneys was dated January 13, 1997, and delivered the same day. In fact, a copy of the record is marked received by the president's office at Loyola on January 13. The assessment review where Dr. McClatchy told Dr. Colburn that she was going to be terminated was January 15. That's also in this record. The review is dated January 15th. So it is incorrect that she had any inkling that she was going to be terminated prior to her attorneys delivering the letter alleging discrimination to the president of the university, to Dr. McClatchy, and to the people Dr. McClatchy reported to.
Right, counsel. Thank you. Counsel, is there anything else that you wanted? Thank you. The court will take the case under advisement. Proceed to